Hello, ladies and germs, and welcome to another episode of PWT Talks NXT. I'm not Kelly Wells. My name is Harley R. Padgett. I am the fill-in host this week, as much like the NXT champion Andrade Almas, Kelly Wells is mysteriously absent. I am joined this week, though, by Justin M. James and Tom Staupe. We are the PWT Talks NXT crew, as it would be. I also do the written reports for PW Torch, covering Ring of Honor, weekly television, as well as pay-per-views, and I co-host a podcast for PW Torch called Talking Honor, where myself and Lola Bradbury discuss the week in Ring of Honor. You can find all of that at PW Torch. Justin, what's your deal?
I am the NXT course TV correspondent for the Torch, and you can reach me at M_James at Twitter.
And Tom Staupe is back with us. He was not here last week because he was live in Full Sail Arena watching next month's television.
That's right, and that's what I do for the Torch. I report on the tapings. You can check that out if you're interested in the spoilers for what's going to happen over the next couple of weeks. The tapings don't show us everything because they do film some backstage segments at the PC and things like that. So I don't know everything, but I do promise that while on the show, I will do my very, very best to not delve into those spoilers, but I may have some interesting observations, non-spoilery, as to what goes on at the tapings that may be of note. And I am on Twitter at Tom Staupe.
Yes. As exciting as CM Punk's big return was, we cannot discuss it yet. So
right.
no rumors, no spoilers on that front. So this week's show, this was a loaded show. Not only did we have, we had four matches officially. Some of them were a little less than a full match, it seemed. We also had a contract signing. We also had, again, a promo that wasn't a promo. A lot going on this week, but we closed off. So let's talk about how the show ended. The big contract signing. NXT TakeOver New Orleans, we are 24 days away, so 3.5 weeks, and we're finally starting to get a sense of what the card might be. This was supposed to be Aleister Black and Andrade Almas signing the contract, but Andrade was not there. Instead, he sent his... How are they referring to her? His business associate? His advocate?
Business
his
manager? She did act like the advocate Paul Heyman tonight, though.
She did. She was a bit more slappy than Paul Heyman is. But yeah, so we got this contract signing. It was a short one. You know, no tables got smashed, which seems like a first for a WWE contract signing. We just got Aleister making a couple short jokes at her expense and implying that, you know, Andrade doesn't measure up to him and Andrade is not as good as him. She slapped him. He was not about to put his hands on a woman, but he knew somebody who was, or who would be willing to, I should say. And we got the return of Candice LeRae. I was just thinking, actually, earlier in this segment, we hadn't seen Candice in a couple weeks. She hasn't wrestled a match on NXT yet, and that I was worried that she was going to sort of drift off into the same territory as War Machine and EC3, where just complete vanishing for weeks at a time. But we did not get that. That's not what happened. Justin, what were your thoughts on the whole contract signing shenanigans?
I liked it for the moment. At the moment, but the more I reflect on it, the less I liked it. I really think that Aleister Black's voice should be not heard that much. And it's not because he's bad on the mic. It's just because that's not his character. I thought that him making short, not just one, but a zillion jokes about Vega's height was just, it should be below him. Oh, geez, there I go with that.
Zing.
Yeah, that's actually a tweet that he just posted was a zing. That's not his level. That doesn't make sense for him to be making jokes about her height. It's so totally irrelevant. So what? She's a woman who's like 5'1" or 5'2" or something. My sister's that tall, you know, so it's like you cut on her for her height, you're cutting on my sister. Thanks. My mother-in-law is that tall. That just didn't work for me. It was ha-ha. The jokes were predictable and lame. I did like Candice LeRae coming out. I truly think that we're going to see LeRae versus Vega sometime soon.
Yeah, it feels like they've had enough cat fights, or however you want to call it now, that you feel like we need to see an actual match between them. Is it at TakeOver New Orleans? I don't know. I mean, it's been a long time since we've had two women's matches on an episode on a TakeOver. I don't remember the last time. I don't know if you guys do. But
has there been a time?
Maybe in the era of the Four Horsewomen, possibly.
Maybe, that would sound right to me.
Maybe we'll look that up for next week.
Okay.
We'll try to investigate that in a future date. But Tom, what were your thoughts on everything? On the return of Candice? That's the other thing. And I'm so tempted to pass off to Tom to answer our questions about what will happen in the future, but we don't want spoilers. So Tom, don't tell us if they had a match in Full Sail.
Right. I will try to, because sometimes giving non-answers can be an answer in and of itself, but I will. I know I failed a little bit in tipping off Kelly previously that Gargano was going to become the number one contender, much as I tried to avoid it. But if it's not playing too coy, just based on what happened tonight, I don't know if this is something that's going to lead to a takeover match or not. I know I would love for it to, but what happened tonight was definitely the most galvanizing element, I think, in leading me to believe that there absolutely has to be a bell-to-bell payoff for this. I think it has to come down to a one-on-one showdown. Beyond that, I'm with Justin in that there was something just off about it to me that just felt weird, and I was really trying to pinpoint, and I was like, what am I going to say on the show about this, because it feels weird, but I don't know why, because I think about it, and everything makes sense. What they're doing makes sense. Is it the fact that Candice is coming out and she's helping another man who's not Johnny? No, that doesn't make sense, because she can do whatever she wants. Is it that Zelina came out without Andrade? No, I actually liked that. What it was exactly what Justin was talking about, that Alistair was sort of yucking it up with the crowd. He even after he told his first short joke, he looked at the crowd like, huh, yeah, you like that? And standing on the stage with Candice at the end, it really felt out of character for him. I feel like this guy, it's like, wait a second, doesn't he just sort of like nestle up in a cocoon in the boiler room of whatever building they're in? But I guess I'm supposed to believe that he was collaborating with Candice backstage to do this run-in. So it did feel very strange, and it didn't do anything to get me hyped for the title match. From where I sit right now, watching what we've seen on TV thus far, I feel like Andrade goes over. I don't view Alistair as much of a threat. I feel like his contention is obligatory based on his popularity, which is that shouldn't come off as a knock against him. I don't know. I mean, I'm not hyped for the match right now, so they have some work to do.
Yeah, I will say this whole past month or so, everything since the last takeover on NXT television has felt a little off. I think we discussed this last week, Justin. I don't know if it's the untimely injuries with Lars, if it's the weird story with Johnny leaving in the middle of what seemed to be a big build to a takeover match. The fact that it's at Center Stage and not Full Sail has had kind of this weird off vibe. Like, the commentators are at ringside instead of up on the stage, and Black just walks out instead of rising up out of the mist. All these things together just give it this really... It's been hard to get into. I haven't found anything really compelling of NXT in the past month and a half.
Yeah, it's like, I feel like they're taping in my local armory.
Yeah.
Or the Shriners Temple or something, you know? It's...
And so you're sort of implying house shows here, and we've been hearing such great things about the house shows lately. A show like the one we got tonight, with the exception of some high points, kind of makes me think, man, televise one of those house shows. That sounded good.
One other thing about the Black Pearl that just rubbed me wrong, and I thought of it while you guys were talking, is that I think what truly rubbed me wrong is that this was a John Cena promo.
Yes.
It was a and John Cena does this promo fine for what it is, but this was up and down. I mean, how many times have we seen John Cena say, well, I'm not going to beat you up, but I brought a friend who will. And, you know, he brings in, you know, woman wrestler to go beat up the woman who's giving him grief, you know? We've seen this, like, so many times. It's just so, like, main roster 101, you know, the promo, the jokes about the height, the I'm not going to beat up a woman, so I brought up a woman wrestler to do it for me. That whole shtick. And, you know, just a couple months ago, we were seeing, you know, half the striped shirts in the company pulling, you know, male referees pulling apart Nikki Cross and Asuka. And we were okay with that, you know, them being that hands-on. And I just feel like this is a step back for the women. I feel like this is two main roster, pro wrestler for Aleister Black. He's not supposed to be a pro wrestler character.
Yeah, I don't know what the right way for him to respond to being slapped by Zelina is. He could just shrug it off and walk away, you know, kind of no sell it. He could just
turn into a cloud of bats and fly off.
I can't think of any way for him to respond that, you know, fits well or makes him look strong, which makes me think, well, they should stop putting people in this position. It's
yes, right.
Zelina's solid enough on the mic. Andrade's good enough that can't they get heat other ways than just her slapping people? Like, it comes across like even Lana didn't resort to that sort of thing when her and Rusev were starting out.
And I hate it because it just brings up these just old, ugly pro wrestling stereotypes of, you know, where I'm a woman and I'm going to emasculate a man by slapping him and he can't hit me because I'm a woman. It's just...
Yeah, if it was the 90s, he'd all of a sudden grab her in the middle of the match on the apron and kiss her or... You know,
yeah.
Bend her over and spank her or something. But we can't do that. So now we're in this weird... Yeah, we're like, you know, this is supposed to be the contract signing for the main event of TakeOver. But instead it turns into Candice LeRae beating up Zelina, which has nothing to do with the main event, really.
Yeah, and Smurfs and Gargamel.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm really hoping things get back on track next week when we return to Full Sail and we start building seriously towards TakeOver. I feel like that's the other thing that's had us kind of off the rails a bit this past month, is they took a long time to start officially building to TakeOver. We took a lot of weird detours into short mini storylines and stuff that didn't really go anywhere.
Yeah.
Or stuff that seemed like, you know, they like last week. Okay, this leads us into our next point. Last week, we got this altercation in the parking lot. Roddy and Pete Dunne are talking about, hey, I want another shot at your UK title. Yeah, well, I'm happy to give it to you at any point. The Undisputed Era show up. They stick their nose in. And we think, oh, I thought at the time, okay, maybe this is a slow build to Pete Dunne, Adam Cole, UK title at TakeOver. And then 5 minutes later, they're like, next week, it's the United Kingdom title on the line. And it's like, oh, well, that feels a little hasty, a little quick. That's all it takes to get a title shot is to just... you know, annoy somebody in the parking lot for 30 seconds. But I don't know. Anyway, we got that match. And you know what? I'm going to send it to Tom first. I'm not going to let Justin talk first about Adam Cole. Tom, your thoughts on the United Kingdom Championship match?
Well, back to those house shows, I think the main thing that I was hearing from this recent tour that they went on was how good Adam Cole was every night. I was particularly hearing about really, really great things about his match with Chris Dijak. And I was, you know, granted that tour happened after this taping. I was hoping that we would see a glimpse of that Cole in the ring with one of the very best workers the entire company has right now in Pete Dunne. And I'm not sure that Cole, even paired with Dunn, did much to silence his very vocal haters right now. I would even say that was probably the most generous Fight Forever chant I've ever heard. And, you know, the match was fine. I think it was probably hurt by the fact that O'Reilly and Fish were at ringside, and it seemed inevitable that they would probably interfere and get a DQ finish, which is exactly what happened. I feel like it was even something that hurt the match even more was that it really did not feel like the UK title was in jeopardy. I don't think anyone thought that this was how Dunn is going to finally lose the title just in a random, NXT TV match against Adam Cole right now. So I'm still actually, Harley, it was what you said on the show last week about Cole that finally put words to what I've been thinking about him. I still like him, but this match was just sort of like I won't remember it tomorrow.
Yeah, the first half of the match was just done, just kicking Cole's ass for 5 minutes, 10 minutes. I don't know. It felt like a long time. Where Cole,
so what else is new?
The only offense Cole got was pushing him off the top rope. The second half picked up a little bit better. I liked when Cole got on the offense a bit. The one thing that I think the high point for me of this match was actually Fish and O'Reilly as Cole's sort of seconds at ringside. Bobby Fish especially is so great in that capacity. He was trash-talking Pete Dunne throughout the match, and then as soon as Cole went on offense, unlike a lot of managers or a lot of times when you have your tag team partner at ringside, they just kind of stand there or they just clap or something, Fish was actually shouting out advice to Cole, saying, he's down, do this, which is just, like, that's great logical sort of fighting sports-based reality, right? That if you got experienced veterans at ringside, they should be giving you advice. That should be the advantage. So I loved all of that, but I totally agree with Tom. I didn't think the title was going to change hands. I figured there was probably going to be some sort of screwy finish. I still think that Cole's being presented. I think the way we're viewing Cole is the way that they want us to view Cole, which is right. Like kind of as a loser and a weasel. I think that's purposeful, but I also am starting to wonder how long that can last before it switches from us being angry at his character and just not taking him credible at all. I know Justin probably doesn't take him credible at all as it is.
No, absolutely not.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, I'm Wade Keller, and I urge you to be sure that you're also subscribing to the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast at Podcast One and the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. All you have to do is search Wade Keller in Apple Podcasts or whatever podcast app you use on your Apple or Android device to subscribe to both feeds. There's a red brand covering Raw and SmackDown every Monday night and Tuesday night, and it's downloadable a couple hours after the show. And then there's also the Wade Keller Podcast Flagship Edition on Thursdays with a rotation of co-hosts, including Jason Powell from ProWrestling.net, Todd Martin, Bruce Mitchell, and others. And then there's our Interview Friday edition. Every Friday, I'm joined by a guest who has worked in the wrestling business, including ex-WWE creative team members like Kevin Eck talking about Drew McIntyre.
Drew was a young guy, and did it go to his head, and did he walk around like he was the chosen one? He did, and I was frank with him, and I said, Drew, just so you know, this is how they view you.
And Podcast One's own Christian Harloff talking about his days working for WWE and Vince McMahon specifically.
As far as their perception of him, I mean, he's the king. He walks in, and it's just, you can feel it. I mean, if the force was real, you would feel the force powering into the room when he enters.
And pro wrestlers, including NWA World Heavyweight Champion Nick Aldis, also known as Magnus, talking about the challenges facing Ronda Rousey as she transitions from MMA to WWE.
Think about, like, the press conference and stuff like that. They just, someone tells them, like, all right, now it's your turn to go out there, right? I'm sure if you ask Ronda, she'd probably say this moment is the result of hundreds of people's work, meticulous preparation and planning and timing and everything. And now suddenly it's like, go. And that can be very overwhelming.
Just search Wade Keller on Apple Podcasts or anywhere else you listen to podcasts.
Well, and what about the rest of the match, Justin? What about Roderick Strong making the save afterwards. What does that lead to?
It was exactly. The only thing that I actually got a prediction right. I know it doesn't count when I put the prediction in my write-up because obviously I could go and change it before it gets published. But yeah, I predicted to myself, and you can ask my 10-year-old to confirm, but I predicted that Fish and O'Reilly at some point would get involved and that Roderick Strong would even the odds. What I enjoyed here is, and I'll say this was probably the most enjoyable match I've seen Adam Cole in other than the War Games match, which he was like 1/8 of. Did I get that right? No, 1/12 of, rather. I can't remember how many people are in the War Games now. This was the best Adam Cole match I've seen on NXT, and I think a lot of that has to do with Pete Dunne, because Pete Dunne is Pete Dunne. And I thought that Adam Cole did a great job of taking that offense and selling it. Not that we need to put Pete Dunne over anymore, but he did a good job with that. And I did feel that Cole's limited moveset worked in his favor because he was coming from such a strong disadvantage earlier in the match, right? You know, so you're like, you know, he's just trying to do anything he can to survive at this point. And that felt good. It was just predictable, though. I mean, you knew the title wasn't changing hands, and the only question was if it would be a disqualification from Fisher O'Reilly or if it was just going to meet Adam Cole losing outright, with them announcing that there would be a contract signing after the match. You knew this match was not going to be long when you just looked at the clock. So it was a good match. It did what it did. I truly think we're going to see Pete Dunne and Roderick Strong teaming up at some point in the near future, perhaps to face Fish and O'Reilly, perhaps to face Cole and Fish. Maybe all three. It could be a 3-on-2 handicap match. I don't know. I like the in-ring psychology. Pete Dunne continues to impress me. And I hope that this is the beginning of a slow heel turn for him.
The two versions of Cole that I like best are kind of goofy Cole, I guess, maybe house show Cole. We saw it on TV in the Drew McIntyre match in San Antonio with Michaels as the referee, playing a little bit more on the entertainment side of things. I think he does that really well. But I also, more relevant to a match that you can take more seriously, I like cerebral Cole when he's suckering in his opponents and, tricking them, and it's a battle of the wits more than it is a physical battle, and he can take down more imposing threats that way. And I'm hoping we can see more of that as opposed to what we saw tonight, because even hitting Dunn with two last shots, I don't think there was any tension leading to the finish here.
And the post match with the Roddy and his buddy fighting off the trio of other guys just gave me big flashbacks to Sanity. I was waiting for No Way Jose or Cash's owner to run out randomly and make it into a six-man. It's a weird situation, because you'd think, oh, maybe this is leading to some sort of like six-man tag, but Fish and O'Reilly should be involved in the tag team division, not in a stables feud. And Roddy, I mean, here we go. Again, this is another reason why NXT's felt weird to me lately, is the Roderick Strong situation. He went to 205 Live. He's looked really strong in the tournament before being eliminated last night. But throughout the whole tournament, he was still always introduced as NXT superstar Roderick Strong. So we've never been clear whether he was done with NXT, whether it was a call-up to 205 Live. Even now, he's still on NXT, I guess, but is he still going to be on 205 Live next week or the week after? We don't know. It's very... I think all of NXT right now is just kind of killing time until the superstar shakeup next month.
And outside of, tangentially, outside of who? Neville and Rich Swann, has the 205 roster dwindled much since its conception? I can't think of anybody who's been released from it. I mean, obviously Enzo, but he came in after the fact.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Probably not, but there's definitely been people who have been getting less screen time lately, like Tony Nese and Daivari. You don't see them very much anymore.
Sure.
Kendrick's
out
on injuries.
Right, exactly. So Yeah, I'm with you. It's still the situation of he seems like he's wearing a lot of hats right now, and shoot, so does Undisputed Era. So yeah, it's an odd time.
Yes, hopefully post WrestleMania, a lot of things will get cleared up in the WWE universe and the NXT subverse.
The NXT galaxy. Oh God.
Wherever we are.
Actually, isn't that what TNA calls their audience?
The TNA galaxy.
Or I guess it wouldn't be TNA anymore.
I think it's more like the TNA black hole.
Oh. Oh. Why don't you just start calling people short too?
Hey, EC3 feast or famine coming up, I heard.
Oh,
I wonder what's going to happen.
Oh yeah.
I wonder if he gets fired. I think they're going to have to fire him for showing up on NXT while they're like, so you can't be doing that. You're not Austin Aries. You can't just show up in other companies.
That's what happens when you tape like 6 months in advance because you're never sure we can pay your talent.
The only other takeaway I have from the UK title match this week is Pete's victory takes him up to an 8-0 record in NXT. He's not only undefeated, he's got 8 wins under his belt now. And this ties him with Lars Sullivan for the best record in NXT.
That's right, because his one loss was in the tournament.
Yeah, that was before he joined NXT.
Right.
So, yeah.
And
that doesn't count.
Pete Dunne versus Lars Sullivan, that would be a match I'd be interested in seeing.
That's a match. I would love to see. I mean, because then you're looking at, like, can he even hit the bitter end on Lars Sullivan, who's like 800 pounds bigger than him?
Yeah,
Lars Sullivan probably eats a pancake the size of Pete Dunne every day.
Or Pete tries to bend Lars's fingers back and Lars just flips him through the air with two fingers.
Yeah, he just flexes the fingers and Dunne goes flying. Oh, now we're starting to get into Joey Ryan territory.
Yeah, I mean, we can't be talking about that on this show. This is a rated PG. G show, rated PG
it
show.
Is.
All right. Also on the show, you know what? Let's skip over the take stuff for now because there's a lot to discuss there. We'll do a little short talk on the women. Dakota Kai versus Lacey Evans.
Short talk on the women.
Yes. I'm referring more to the time than making any jokes at Dakota's height expense. But there you go. They announced 4 matches for this week's show last week, and we said, how are they going to fit all that in? And this is how, because this match was how long, Justin?
56 seconds.
Not even a minute along. And Lacey with another loss. Dakota with, I think, her first win in NXT. So good on her. Maybe her second. It was really just a prelude to the women's title match at TakeOver with Shayna trying to attack Dakota again. Ember making the save. They brawled. Dakota gave a little assist. So Ember stands tall. And we know now it's official. TakeOver New Orleans. Ember and Shayna round 2. Or I guess round 3?
Yeah.
Round 2 on TakeOver for the women's title. Justin, your thoughts on all of this?
The only surprise in this match is I expected Baszler to come out while the match was still going. That was the only surprise here. It even made sense that Moon would get the upper hand with Kai's help. You just don't want... You know, we've already seen Baszler demolish Moon so many times, and that it's already been well established that the only way Moon can beat Baszler either in the ring or in post-match activity is with the assistance of somebody else.
Tom, rebuttal.
Not much to rebut, unfortunately. I love coming to the women's division's defense, but I am a little worried about it right now. I think they're going to need a strong comeback after WrestleMania, basically after TakeOver New Orleans. Right now we're getting these short matches. They seem absent a lot of the time. It probably isn't too much of a spoiler territory to say that there really wasn't too much women's action on the tapings that I was at, which was extremely disappointing. And they've just got such a massive division in NXT. There's plenty of people that you could be doing things with. I think the only things I'm liking are just A, seeing Shayna, because I'm right now I'm so high on her that I, you know, just glimpsing her on the screen, I turn into a little fanboy. And the Bianca squash matches. Those hopefully are building her up for something something big this year. I'm with Justin that from the beginning, like from was it Lacey? Whoever came out second when it was clear who was going to be wrestling, clearly this is building to something different. It wasn't, even before the bell rang, the match was not about the match. And I just hope that the women's division can rebound.
Yeah, we've got so many strong players or potential players in the division, but nobody feels like they're picking up any consistent speed. We see Dakota occasionally, but not often enough. We don't get promos or video packages on any of the women to really feel like, oh, she's getting built up. Bianca's the closest. Bianca Belair has picked up a handful of enhancement victories now where it feels like she might be leading towards a feud with somebody. Kairi was here, then she got injured and left, then she came back and lost, and now she's apparently out of the conversation again. So we don't know what has happened with Kairi Sane. People like Vanessa Bourne and Lacey Evans are just kind of around. Nikki Cross is so directionless. I don't know what's happening with her. And it's so disappointing because there's so many strong women or people who could be strong women. I really feel like at this point, I'm going with Baszler to win the title in New Orleans and Ember to get drafted to Raw. As for after that, I don't know. I guess it becomes the story of maybe Baszler is just the heel champion and everybody else in the roster hates her because she's already got built-in grudges now with Kairi, with Dakota. You could easily see her coming into conflict with Candice LeRae at some point. But yeah, it's so disappointing.
And you could even...
Please
continue.
I was just going to say it's so disappointing that we don't have multiple storylines going on at the same time. We've only really got, it seems to be like the Shayna Baszler show right now, and then plus cast.
Yeah, nothing really too full-fledged, and if that does happen, right now I feel like it's hard to call, although gun to my head, I'm also going Shayna. You could build up some new baby faces for her as well, some people that maybe aren't on the show right now, because, I mean, you've got Peyton and Billy probably going up in this unfortunately titled Battle Royal that they're doing. They are back active again. They've been wrestling live events again as of just this week, I believe. And even when they showed the video package for it on Raw and SmackDown, they explicitly showed Shayna, Kairi, I think Billy and Peyton were some other ones. I don't know. They definitely made it very clear that women from all brands are eligible. So I think that we'll get some clean out, or maybe just some cameos, but I think there will be some call-ups there. And then there's room. So we'll see.
Justin, any more thoughts on the women, or should we move on to our first email of the show?
I'll just say that I think that they've just created a booking disaster with Baszler, having her lose to, and she looks so dominant, yet she can't win the title against somebody that she beats the snot out of every time they meet.
True, but she's only had one match with a clean finish. The second one, Kairi interfered before there could be an end.
I know.
And the first one ever outsmarted her with the wrestling. And, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, it's just frustrating to me. Like, I just want to see Shayna Baszler break Ember Moon into 300 pieces, send her to the main roster, and be done with it, and then break everyone until, I don't know, until Asuka comes back.
until Asuka's daughter comes of age in 20 years.
Or Paige suddenly comes back to NXT, or Charlotte, or Becky Lynch, or something. Yeah. Like, that's what I want to see. And I know that, you know, two matches in a row now, we've predicted Ember Moon gets beat up and goes to the main roster, leaving Baszler's heel. And the rest of the division is so weak. It's been even Steven booking. these go nowhere characters, these people who don't have any characters. You know, what's Dakota Kai's character? Dakota Kai and Kairi Zane are interchangeable, as far as I can tell. One's a pirate princess. One looks like she just came out of a rave. Whoa, you know, it's just.
Well, I think
these people used to have characters, and they used to have serious characters, and it's just garbage. Dakota Kai is like a 205 Live character. She's TJP.
I think if you're looking for the next big baby face in the division, it's definitely going to be Candice LeRae. I mean, the fact she closed the show tonight, that says something. And anybody who is even passingly familiar with her from the indies knows that she was a huge deal everywhere she went already. So I definitely think she'll be the next great white baby face in NXT.
I feel, you know, we talked about Nikki, who's completely directionless right now. I feel Kairi, you mentioned it as well, is teetering on complete directionlessness as well. And I think that she's definitely in that category as well, though, that she, I mean, the reactions at the Mae Young Classic, a lot of that, especially having been part of the crowd with the exception of the finals, a lot of that was just excitement for the fact that they were doing the tournament period. But people got really excited, including myself, for Kairi because she was on a mission. And right now, even myself sitting in that crowd, I get excited getting to see Kairi, but it wanes really quickly. And you can see her in the ring trying to hype the crowd back up. And I personally feel that that's because she doesn't have a goal right now. So I feel like if they gave her a path to go on, a distinct goal to achieve, and she actually stood a chance of achieving it, then the reactions would turn around and she could be in that conversation as well as just absolutely white hot popular.
For sure. She's definitely got sort of that it factor. Like a feud with her and Bianca Belair would be great.
Mm. They had such a good match in the second round too.
Yeah, if they let them have a proper feud. I'm not saying like a match here, a match there, but I mean, you know, like a classic wrestling feud with backstage interactions and promos and other pit stops along the way. You know, that's what I want. I want stories in wrestling. I don't want just these matches thrown out there.
Right, agreed.
Wrestling fans, if you're looking for a unique and entertaining way to get your wrestling podcast fix, check out Ring Rust Radio. Ring Rust Radio uses its trademark brand of banter to cover all professional wrestling you love, including WWE, NXT, New Japan, Lucha Underground, ROH, Impact Wrestling, and more. We also hold sit-down interviews with some of the biggest names in the history of the business, such as Stone Cold Steve Austin, Shawn Michaels, Bret Hart, Chris Jericho, Kurt Angle, Trish Stratus, AJ Styles, and Roman Reigns. For those of you who want their wrestling with a perfect mix of serious analysis and comic relief, find Ring Rust Radio dropping every Wednesday night on Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, Stitcher, and wherever you get your podcasts.
But on a separate topic, let's go to our first email. This week it comes from Michael McGivern. It's a short one. He says, how aggressively bad is Lacey Evans' music? That's it. That's the question. You know what? I'll plead that I'm one of the people who pay attention to theme music that much or don't remember it that well. So I have no comment on the matter. Justin, I'm sure you do. Lacey Evans' theme music, how terrible is it?
I don't think it's great. I do somewhat pay attention to theme music. Like, it really depends. Like, Aleister Black, I'm all over that. But, like, Lacey Evans' theme music, it's not great at all. It's just this generic, I'm a woman kind of, it could be Bella Twins music for all I care, you know? Like, hi, I'm a strong, sexy, powerful woman.
Yeah,
Always beware.
For me, entrances are extremely important. I try to pay a lot of attention to that kind of thing. Lacey's is one of the lesser offenders in this case, although it is interchangeable. I don't feel like it says too much about her. But that right there, I really enjoyed seeing Michael's email come in because I feel like it speaks to a larger issue with the music that's been churned out lately. There's just such a quick turnaround on it. We've seen multiple cases where the music it's like they asked for it so quickly that these guys who did the Glorious theme and did Shinsuke Nakamura's theme and have done music that has already become iconic for the current time. And they're just churning out the stuff that all sounds exactly the same. And I'm kind of regurgitating the Jim Johnston quote there, but it's absolutely true. It doesn't speak to any of these individuals. And there's even cases, it happened with the Usos, it happened with Jason Jordan, I want to say, it happened with Baron Corbin, where they sort of evolved the music over the course of a couple weeks, almost because it wasn't ready yet, but they just wanted to go with it, even though it wasn't ready. And there have just been so many disappointing themes lately that I think are really hurting characters on the main roster. I feel like one of the main reasons Matt Hardy is floundering right now with the Woken gimmick, and God, I hope this compound thing works out well. I'm super excited for it, but I'm also super worried for it. I think one of the main reasons is because of this god-awful theme they've got him coming out to that sounds exactly like Mojo Rawley's and exactly like whoever else's and Jason Jordan's, and it sounds like Lacey Evans's theme. Why not? I mean, they're all very computerized and very samey, and they don't speak to the identity. You don't get the real American Hulk Hogan or the glass smashing, Steve Austin, just for the two most prominent examples, probably.
So how much of that is due to the fact, Lacey, we've talked about this ad nauseum, so we won't go into it in depth today, but Lacey Evans has never had a strong, identifiable character or personality. So you got to imagine it's harder to create sort of a strong, fitting theme for her if you don't really have something to go off of.
But vice versa. It's for a lot of, if you're a character who doesn't get promo time, your entrance is a significant part of your character. And so if your entrance and your entrance music are lame, then you have no character.
Yeah, and maybe it's something like that, even though it would take the extra step of maybe bringing her in the studio or just getting her on the phone. Even if, depending on how corporate they want to go with it, just talking to the people who are booking her, like what do you want to say about her when she comes out? And this, I can't even tell what the opening lyric is, the hello, pleased to meet you or whatever it says. Maybe switch it out for something that sounds it doesn't have to be Jack Swagger, but it may be a little bit more patriotic that speaks to her status as a veteran, or maybe something a little bit more like 50s housewife that speaks to her, you know, cleaning house and I'm a real lady kind of persona.
It's got to have
something that nails it down a little bit more.
She has a southern accent. She's from South Carolina, literally, and billed as. Have it be some kind of like a southern strut kind of thing. Anything, you know, they have musical traditions they can draw on to enhance, you know, these aspects of her character as this kind of military World War II pinup girl, as, you know, the southern lady. They have all these different musical traditions they can draw on. And instead, they just do this generic thing with these goofy lyrics about whatever it is.
Well, our host Kelly is absent this week because he's sick, but he made sure to send in some thoughts on this. He said, Lacey's music is pretty bad, but I'll say this for it. It made no sense and was even worse when they were presenting her as a face.
Yep.
Well, speaking of entrances, I did notice that she didn't do her little spin around the turnbuckle that she usually does. So she's removing the entertaining aspects of her character that we wanted to see. Which is always a good heel tactic.
And we've talked about this, I think, before. They've been potentially testing out a new stable at house shows of sort of ex-veteran figures featuring her, Wesley Blake, and some others. So who knows? Maybe we won't be hearing her music much longer. Because if they go that way, obviously you'd assume they're going to have some sort of new branded music.
I was going to say, because Wesley Blake's wasn't much better.
Yeah, I can't say I remember his at all. But he's gone through many a gimmick change during his time in NXT. And speaking of people who have been in NXT for a long time, Angelo Dawkins and the Street Profits picked up a win tonight in the Take Tournament. They got a big win over Heavy Machinery. This was a pretty short match as well, all things considered. I think they finished off Dozovich with like two moves.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, the Take division is looking kind of like the Women's division too. There's a lot of personalities. The Take division has more personality than the Women's division, I'd say. you look at Street Profits, Heavy Machinery, teams like that, it seems like they got potential. They've got, they could go somewhere, even if they're not, you know, the greatest wrestlers in the world at the moment. But they're not being given.
It's a different one. We're talking about Knight and Dozovic.
See, I feel like I haven't had a chance to see them in any sort of long form match, or maybe one in their time, but not, they haven't.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
I think that was a realization I had with both of these teams during this match. We'll talk about Sanity and Sabatelli and Moss afterwards. But with Street Profits and Heavy Machinery, I went into it thinking, I can't see either of these teams beating Authors of Pain, let alone winning the tournament, specifically because Authors of Pain are former champions. They've been in many feuds with lots of different teams. We haven't really seen Street Profits or Heavy Machinery in any sort of feud other than, you know, bickering with Sabatelli and Moss. And that was like a half-assed enhancement feud. That's like a Saturday Night Main Event feud, not a Raw or SmackDown feud. So they still just feel like they're being established and yet are all of a sudden being thrust in this position where Street Profits are now in the semifinals of this tournament facing the Authors of Pain in a matter of weeks. And maybe they do pick up the big win, but right now, it seems I'd be hard pressed to picture that happening. I don't know. Tom, without telling us who wins, what are your thoughts on this match with Street Profits and Heavy Machinery?
Well, I think across the board. Oh, well, you know what? I'm going to open up. Did you guys hear the news about Otis Dozovic?
No.
It's good news. It's good news. Oh. He and Mandy Rose are now engaged.
Wow, that's like Lana and Rusev.
Are you trolling us? I'm actually like, no.
I wish I could say that I knew they were a couple, but I honestly thought that he just had a very public crush. But good for them.
Wow.
Stakes and weights, baby. Stakes and weights. That's where it's at.
So do you know, since you're such a fan of them, which one is stakes and which one is weights?
Does it matter?
They're
both stakes and weights.
Thank you for having a good answer to my stupid question that I actually put some forethought into. Okay, well,
Tucker Knight hit a dropkick. That's all you need to know.
I'm that guy in the crowd who, when a big guy does a move like that, I'm shouting, "You're killing your gimmick! Stop it! You shouldn't be leaving your feet." And then when a guy starts flipping around, I'm going, "You're killing the business. Stay on your feet." I should just be more quiet. Anyhow, I think across the board, we all predicted TM61 was going to win that first round match. So it was, however they managed to do so. So it was a surprise to see AOP go forward, probably just because it's like, well, you know, looking at the rest of the bracket, even on the other side, who the heck is going to beat AOP right now? So this match felt like, okay, we've got two entertaining teams. Maybe they'll do some entertaining things because we don't really think that either of them are going to make it to the finals. It would be a surprise if they did. And I am fine with Heavy Machinery. They're fun. I really like Street Profits, although lately, I feel like Montez Ford, Montez Ford is fantastic, but he's relying way too much on the goofy stuff, and it's gotten to a point where, I mean, they didn't almost lose the match, but they were at a disadvantage at the beginning because he was focusing on doing this goofy stuff, and I don't feel like that's a babyface kind of thing. I don't want to cheer for a guy who's doing something explicitly stupid that I know he's just going to get clotheslined in the face for. And that's exactly what happened. So that his role in the match didn't bring me into it the way that he did when they were facing all these jobber teams. And I feel that for the rest of 2018, Street Profits probably has more potential than Heavy Machinery does right now. But as of this moment, I don't know where either of these teams go. I don't think we've seen any real declarations of a mission from Heavy Machinery, but Street Profits cut that big promo calling out all of the major teams in the division and saying that in 2018 they're going to conquer after they came and saw in 2017. And here we are heading into TakeOver New Orleans, and it's not like they have to be on top of the world right now, but it feels like they're pretty far away from it, unless somehow they're able to pull out a shock win in the second round. Who knows?
Yeah, I mean, maybe it's a fun... That could be a fun story. It's Street Profits managed to make it to the end while still being this goofy, fun-loving team, but then they get walloped by Fish and O'Reilly in New Orleans. And that sort of the next morning they wake up and they say, okay, well, we're coming back for a rematch, and now we're serious. Now we've learned from our rookie mistake, and we're ready to come at you. Once the bell rings, like, fun and games are over.
Yeah, like, I guess, I think you're picking up what I was trying to put down there, that it doesn't necessarily even have to be something as drastic as a heel turn, but something that if they can actually go somewhere with it, where they can say, you know what, yeah, we have been fooling around too much, and we need to take this more seriously.
I'm always for more character development and growth in professional wrestling. Justin, your thoughts on... we'll talk about the tournament as a whole, but your thoughts on Street Profits versus Heavy Machinery.
Tucker Knight hit a drop kick.
Stakes and weights.
Stakes and weights, baby. Otis Dozovic in particular is one of the top three or four most entertaining people in NXT right now.
He's so weird looking. He's so goofy and just like, but I love it.
His charisma is off the charts. Where, like, what rock did they find this guy under? Like, he just takes this. He reminds me of Velveteen Dream, in that he just has this character that's just out there, and he runs with it. But unlike Dream, like, he has built this entire persona without opening his mouth once, other than like their occasion, other than shouting stakes and weights, and like that one time they talked to Riddick Moss and Tino Sabatelli backstage about something or other. Yeah, he doesn't need to talk. Like Knight and Dozovic just have done such a great job at building characters strictly through in-ring action, and that's one of the things I respect about them. And I remember a couple years ago when Tucker Knight was this loser in NXT, and now he's just so much fun. I like this team. I like that Montez Ford was able to beat, you know, Heavy Machinery, who by all rights was dominating the match, by having the compactor scouted and knowing exactly how to counter by having, you know, using Knight's momentum to have him dump over the top of the rope, and then able to get, you know, and I love the way Montez Ford sold the win after the end. I mean, he looked like he recognized that he was lucky to be walking away from that ring. That was the look on his face. It wasn't like, wow, we won. It was, wow, we survived and we picked up a win, and I'm not dead. And it was just really cool to see that from him. Hopefully it will lead to a more serious Montez Ford. I love that thing with the cup at the beginning, because Dozovic just had me dying there. For what it was, a match that I was pretty sure the Street Profits would win, for what it was, tons of fun, put a smile on my face, and made me glad to be alive today.
What does it say about how I watch wrestling that I'm so critical of this match between two teams that I am a fan of, and yet I absolutely loved Uso and Naomi versus Mandy Rose and Goldust, and that was total comedy, and they barely worked a spot for the first 5 minutes. It was all, you know, young guy versus old guy who can't keep up with him.
It's because this is NXT and expect better.
Or different stakes. Like, nobody really cares about who wins the mixed match challenge, I don't think, versus this is for a shot for the tag titles on a special event, WrestleMania weekend.
Yeah, true.
Yeah, it's a much more high stakes. And you're right. It's the stakes. It's the fact that it's NXT and we expect better from NXT. So I totally get where you're coming from. But I do like that even despite the goofiness, you know, this was a match once we got past the initial fun and games.
Street Profits are up to an 8-1 record now, which actually puts them just ahead of Authors of Pain with an overall better record. Only teams in NXT history with a better record than Street Profits at the moment are your current champs, Fish and O'Reilly, who are 4-0, and the team that won the first Dusty Classics, Mojo and Finn Balor. That team broke up at 5-0, so nobody's ever going to be able to beat them, I guess.
Mojo and Finn Balor?
Samoa Joe and Finn Balor.
Oh, Samoa Joe. I thought you said Mojo. I was like, yeah. Wait, did I miss something?
You did not. But hey, while we're on the topic of Mojo, I had a moment tonight with Tino Sabatelli where I just was like, oh my God, it's like if Mojo and Zack Ryder had a baby.
Was it when he was dusting his pecs?
Maybe he's got something about the Zack. He's got like a Zack Ryder vibe to him of like the like Jersey Shore type thing.
Yeah, although I don't know if that's where he's from. Obsession with tanning in his body.
Yeah, but then he's got the Mojo football background, and he's also like, there's just something about him that's reeks of obnoxiousness. Yeah. I don't know, but Sabatelli Moss, we thought you, I didn't. Some people on this show thought that they had broken up permanently the last time we saw them. But no, they were back together to have more misconduct and more... what was it this week? We got the accidental... Was it Sabatelli knocked Moss off the apron by mistake?
It was Moss knocking Sabatelli. It was the traditional. It's so overplayed.
Riddick knocked Tino off the apron. And then... No, it's the other way around, I think. I want to say...
No, Riddick knocked Sabatelli off the apron.
And then Sabatelli got attacked by Nikki at ringside?
Yeah.
Okay, and then...
That was the highlight of that match.
And then the other person took the pinfall. So
I don't remember who got pinned, but yeah.
It doesn't matter, because that's how little we care about Sabatelli and Moss. The point is, Sanity won. So once again, we've got another team that, you know, a month ago I didn't think would even still be in NXT at this point. They're still here. They're still beating the other teams and advancing in tournaments. I don't know what's happening in NXT these days, guys. You lost me. Sanity won. They advanced. They're facing the winners of the last match left in the tournament, first round. That's either going to be Oney Lorcan and Danny Burch. Those are two guys we haven't seen in a long time. Or Mustache Mountain, Tyler Bate and Trent Seven, who have only teamed together on NXT maybe once. This tournament's weird. I don't know.
You love pro wrestling podcasts, but you might not have time to listen to all of them. We'll help you decide which ones to listen to and keep you up to date on the ones you're missing at pwpodcasts.com. That website features written recaps of all of the top pro wrestling related podcasts, including Steve Austin, Bruce Pritchard, Edge and Christian, and so on. Check it out. It's pwpodcasts.com, your home for written recaps of all pro wrestling personality hosted podcasts.
Justin, your thoughts on Sanity advancing, on Sabatelli and Moss? Who do they face in the next round? Do Danny and Oney pull off a first big win? Do Mustache Mountain pull off their first big win?
Sanity winning, I think, was a given. If you think otherwise, okay. I think that was a given. I was pretty sure that this match was just an excuse to not only let Sanity advance, but to give Moss and Sabatelli more reasons to break up, which is exactly what it was. I think that Lorcan
I think Lurch and Gomez Lorch are going to dominate.
Team Lorch, I think, has to lose to Mustache Mountain. I don't think Trent Seven's won more than one or two matches as a singles competitor. Tyler Bate cannot be taking any more pins anytime soon. So Mustache Mountain has to win. I can't say that name with a straight face. It just reminds me of that scene in Super Troopers.
I'm blanking right now, but okay, go on.
Wants a mustache ride?
That's their shirt. It's a little gondola going up the text that says, "Take a ride on Mustache Mountain."
There you go.
I'm pitching this. I don't think that actually exists.
Oh, okay.
WWE shop, get at me.
But yeah, I mean, I do like Mustache Mountain as a team. Tyler Bate, especially, is super charismatic. He's outstanding in the ring. Every time I see this guy in the ring, I want more. I just think that giving the, you know, Lorch has got to take another loss, although I don't like either. I like them as a team. So it is what it is. Sanity versus Mustache Man will be fun.
All right.
I do like Sabatelli and because I do. I hope that this breakup, assuming they go forward with it, doesn't end up going the route of Blake and Murphy, where it was kind of like a non-feud and then both guys disappeared. I mean, I know Murphy got injured.
Sylvester LaFour and Marcus Louis.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, just complete vanished off the face of the earth, Twin Peaks style. But that said, there's not too much to invest in right now. So if they did end up disappearing, I might not notice, even though I would like to see Sabatelli get a little bit more attention right now. Although maybe taking him off TV and reintroducing him later, as they ended up doing by necessity with Murphy, will work out. It seems to be working out for Murphy so far. With Sanity, I feel like, you know, all due respect, especially to Eric Young, I feel like their MO lately has been to slow down matches to a pace that suits their liking a little bit better. And this one, Eric Young in particular, I think showed a bit of fire. He was very entertaining to watch in this. Alexander Wolf, maybe it's just his unique look. He sort of looks like a young Captain Spaulding. I want to like this guy, and I'm looking for him to show me something. And you know, I'm still looking. As an aside, I did pop myself in the live crowd by thinking he kind of resembles a large vanilla ice cream cone, and then he kicked someone in the head, and I said brain freeze, and I just couldn't stop laughing to myself for about a minute.
All right.
Great. Now I'm thinking he looks like a big ice cream cone every time I see him. That hadn't occurred to me, but thank you, Tom.
That's what I'm here for, unfortunately.
Readers,
does Wolf even have a finishing move?
The brain freeze.
Yeah, I don't know. Was he even in this match? I like him, and I noticed.
Yes, ouch!
Yes, he was in this match.
I'm
blanking more than freeze. Justin not tearing apart Kyrie and Dakota earlier. Ouch!
I remember Eric Young hitting his neck breaker and hitting the other thing, but I don't remember Wolf being in for a sub.
No, that's how they won. They did their team finisher with Wolf doing a suplex thingy and
the young neck breaker.
Young doing a neck breaker off the top. Come on. Jeez Luigi.
I don't know.
I paid the big bucks to be on this show, and you don't even come prepared.
I have my blinders on when there's a Canadian guy in the ring. That's the only thing I pay attention to. I'll tell you this. If Sabatelli and Moss do break up, they currently have the third worst tag team record in the entire history of NXT.
Who are the other ones that are worse?
They're 2-7. The only teams that have a worst record are the tag team of Corey Hollis and John Skyler. They were 0-5. And former Sanity member Sawyer Fulton and current Street Profit Angelo Dawkins.
That's right.
The tag team of Fulton and Dawkins were 0-7.
They were your enhancement talent for a while, yeah.
Yeah, and now Street Profits are one of the best. So clearly Fulton was the weak link in that team, bringing Angelo down.
Well, he's been released from the company, so there you go.
There you go.
The prospect of him coming back to Sanity is officially over as of a couple months ago.
Well, this takes us, while we're on the topic of tag teams, while we're on the topic of Mustache Mountain, I assume that match is probably going to be next week, Mustache Mountain and Lorcan and Birch. That'll wrap up the first round of the tournament. We got another email from reader Josh DeLee out of St. Louis, Missouri. Josh writes, "What's up, NXT crew? Thanks for answering my question last week, and hopefully you can get to this one, even though you guys had an overflow of emails last week. Last week, 8. This week, only 2. 2.5, maybe. So
2.5, but that
we're saving one for next week.
That would be a little secret."
Josh writes in, "Seeing as TM61 got eliminated in the first round of the Dusty Classic, AOP is the clear favorite to make it to the finals from their side. There's no way the Heavy Machinery will beat them, and the Street Profits don't seem likely. On the other side of that bracket, the babyface teams that could match up with AOP are Sanity and Mustache Mountain. We've already seen Sanity with the belts. Do you think this could be a way to get the UK guys featured on the show more prominently? These guys are too good to not be being used by WWE. This could also serve as a good way for Tyler Bate to get a redemption story going, coming off of all his recent losses. And who doesn't get a kick out of Trent Seven's slow-motion roll in entrance? Thoughts?" I was actually a bit more conflicted than Justin when I saw Mustache Mountain versus Lorcan and Birch, because the UK guys have been so used so sporadically on NXT television. They don't show up consistently. They don't really get a lot of mic time. They show up now and then, here and there. So I was kind of actually thinking Lorcan and Birch would get the win there, move on to second round. Maybe that was just wishful thinking on my part because I love Oney Lorcan so much. But yeah, I mean, that's a toss-up for me. Either team could win there. I'm totally on the fence. I do like the idea of it being sort of the answer to Tyler Bates' recent story, though, because he's been on kind of a losing streak. I don't think it really makes sense. We don't really want to see him turn heel necessarily. So having him find success by going back to his tag team roots instead, that's a nice sort of solution. That gives us another tag team for the division. I could see that. Tom, your thoughts on Mustache Mountain and everything therein?
Yeah, I think Seven and Bate both have good individual upsides, and I think, you know, there's no writing on the wall, there's no major announcement that's been made, but I get the feeling based on these guys and Dunn appearing more regularly recently on NXT that there is at least a loose plan for something. Everything seemed so lost and up in the air after the tournament last year. And even though there's still a big cloud over whatever it may be that's forthcoming for them, this title, I don't think is going away. And I just think the fact that they've been appearing more and working more live events is a sign that they're going somewhere with them. There's nobody in the division I dislike. So, you know, I'm not really saying too much there, but if they do more with them, great. If they don't, that's unfortunate, but they're not going to miss an opportunity to use these guys more. I think they're all in pretty good shape to be prominent moving forward.
Justin, on the state of the United Kingdom,
they prefer to think of themselves as an empire, not a state.
I think that Mustache Mountain really has to be Oney and Danny, unfortunately, in a UK versus UK matchup. Well, UK versus half UK matchup. They really have to win that match. Sandy, former tag team champions. They're well established as being a tough team. Could Mustache Mountain take a loss against Sanity to set up Sanity versus AOP? Because we're just going to assume that AOP beats Street Profits. I think that's reasonable. I don't think that Mustache Mountain would hurt too badly if they lost to Sanity, especially if it's a 10-minute match on a Wednesday night. On the other hand, I think a win over Sanity, who really does not need another title run, I think that their shtick in NXT is well past its prime. They're in that Bray Wyatt territory of repetitive promos that mean nothing at this point.
We're going to defeat you with chaos. I'm Eric Young.
I think that match could go either way, and I would be perfectly happy with it. I cannot see Mustache Mountain beating AOP in this tournament. And I really do think that the money match at this point is seeing AOP versus Fish and O'Reilly. It's a fresh matchup, and I think it would have a really good work rate.
Well, we saw it a couple weeks ago, though.
Did we?
Yeah. How quickly we forget.
I guess it wasn't such a great matchup after all.
AOP got the title shot on TV, and Fish and O'Reilly managed to... I think they won pretty clean, actually. Off a roll-up, maybe, by Kyle?
That's right. Yeah. This is all coming back. You got to keep in mind, I've got three kids, right? So my memory's no good. I can't even remember their birth dates. I can't remember their names half the time. So, yeah, I vaguely remember this. I still think it would be a good match. You know, AOP, Undisputed Era, that's a good match. I don't particularly care for Eric Young and Alexander Wolf in the ring, to be honest. They don't do it to me.
Yeah, fair enough. Here's a question for you guys, not from a listener email, just off of my brain right this second. Is there any chance we're heading towards an era where NXT is no longer a one-hour show? Because we've been talking a lot this week and in past weeks about how many people there are on the roster and how many are kind of sitting on the sidelines from week to week and don't have feuds and don't have stories. Have we reached the point where there's just so much talent in NXT and so much coming in that 1 hour, that 4 hours a month isn't enough time for the entire roster?
Well, I feel like they are not at the height of their popularity right now. So the audience has dwindled from, say, the days of, Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn and perhaps even the Finn Balor era. I'm not sure exactly what the viewer numbers are from year to year there. But I also feel like there are some logistics that go into it. I guess what I'm saying there is that I feel like it would have been more advantageous to expand the time back then. Yeah. But the logistics, you could say they could add to the time by filming live events or doing kind of like a Raw and a SmackDown kind of thing. Like one episode is filmed at one location, but then you add the expense of carting all the camera equipment and everything when they have this really nice relationship with Full Sail built up. I mean, a lot of you hear all the time at the tapings people saying, and I've had the same thought, why don't UCF just, 5 or 6 miles away, the University of Central Florida has a bigger arena. Why don't they just go there? And they've run at least one live event there before. But Triple H and WWE have really developed a good relationship with Gary Jones and Full Sail. So I don't see that going away. And they also have to contend with the fact that NXT setup doesn't just sit there all the time. It gets built on the day of and then broken down afterwards unless there's a back-to-back taping. Incidentally, in May, there's going to be a back-to-back taping. And I think one of the reasons for that is that even though Full Sail is one of those schools that you can start up any month and graduate any month depending on when you're finished, it's not done by semester traditionally, still most of the people do start at a traditional time and then end at a traditional time. So they're going to have a ton of graduations to do, and that's where they do their graduations. So I feel like that's probably why they're going to do the back-to-back tapings. And that's just one example of one of the things that the Full Sail Live studio is used for. I think it's also home to certain concerts for the show production students, or at least it was at one point. They might have the school has changed so much since I went there, but I know they had some studios that they allowed the film students to build sets in and film in. So maybe that's something that goes on when WWE isn't scheduled to be there. But it's just that those are some of the logistics that might go into it that might cause them to not consider extending it. I don't feel like that's something they should or would want to do. Not that it's something that wouldn't come up in a boardroom meeting, though.
I've wondered this many times over the years. There's been a number of times where I said, it just feels like a couple of segments on the show are too rushed. And I don't think that the answer is a two-hour show. I think the answer might be either to allow overrun from time to time or to move to an hour and a half. I think a two-hour show would easily overstay its welcome. Yeah. I think one of the dangers is that if you're doing a two-hour show, you now have to double the number of tapings, right? Because nobody wants to have an eight-hour taping. If you double the number of tapings, you now are jeopardizing NXT as a touring brand. Right.
Before the last couple matches at this most recent taping, Mike Rome and Dasha Fuentes got on the mic and they'll update the crowd a little bit. Again, they don't show us these backstage segments. So every once in a while, and we don't know everything. Like, we didn't have a bracket update. There are storylines that are being shot in the ring that we don't realize has a backstory until we watch it back on TV. But they'll update you on a couple things here and there. And sorry, I wasn't trying to cut you off, but here I am blathering. What I'm getting at is that they had to get on the mic in the ring and say, hey, we're going to give away autographed t-shirts to the 8 loudest fans in the crowd for the next 2 matches, because everybody was just gassed, and they were only filming 4 episodes like usual. And they still had the two major matches to shoot coming up, and nobody wanted to stand up and cheer. So yeah, they had to pull a little ploy to get us to be loud again.
And I'm sure that we've all been to a SmackDown or a Raw taping. I've been to my fair share, and I'll tell you, I'm burnt out. I can't do them anymore. You couldn't pay me enough to go to a 3-hour Raw taping. But even SmackDown, it's like, it's 2 hours.
Yeah.
Plus 205 Live, and you just look at it like, I can't imagine, it's just very difficult. And with them taping at FSU, week after week after, month after month after month, you really want to go there. For these two-hour episodes, that's just a long time to be sitting still. And I'm not a fan of that idea. It's going to jeopardize NXT as a tournament. And the other thing, too, is that every time, NXT goes in these waves where every time I say NXT's got the talent, they've got the storylines, they could go to an hour and a half show. A couple months later, they're sitting there, scraping the barrel for who they're going to throw in the ring. The roster got raided to fill the main roster, or there was releases or something happened. I'm saying these things come in waves, and they just don't have the regular reliable talent pool that Raw and SmackDown have, where you can say, gee, in case of emergency, pull the trigger on our truth.
We know you're a pro wrestling fan, but you might like MMA too. And if so, check out our sister site, MMATorch.com, with live fight event coverage, including UFC pay-per-views, previews of all UFC and Bellator events, the daily news digest, exclusive columns, flashbacks, and much more. Check it out. If you're a fan of MMA, you'll be a fan of MMATorch.com.
And I'll tell you, those bleachers are not forgiving. And even though I just mentioned about Mike Roman, Dasha Fuentes getting up, there isn't really a break. Every once in a while, they'll show an ad, just like anything will show an ad for whatever the latest mobile game is, or a spot for the upcoming Andre documentary or whatever it may be at the time. But you never know when there's going to be an ad that then is followed up by 2 more ads, and oh, that's when I should have gone to the bathroom. Or honestly, yep. And I'm one of these people, I doing the report, I make sure I sit there, but I'll stand up sometimes, not just because I'm excited, but because my lumbar spine is becoming a sinkhole, and I see a lot of other people around me complaining about how their backs hurt sitting on those bleachers. And they have very vague rules about whether or not food is allowed in. So, people get thirsty, want to go out to the water fountain, and so on and so forth. So,
you're
trapped in there for a while.
So if I see you on TV getting a back rub from another audience member, I understand why.
Yes, exactly.
So, okay, readers, no emails next week unless they have coupons for those donut rings that you get for when you got like a hemorrhoid, or for Tom.
Yeah. He'll be carrying it under my arm going in.
He needs a medical device to assist him in these tapings. They're brutal. Readers, please.
Have to put it through security. Oh, for the first time, I had to take off my hat going through security. I think after some recent incidents that have occurred, they've shored things up there. They had to make sure I wasn't smuggling anything in my hat.
Okay. So,
for whatever that's worth, just another random taping observation.
And I think one of the reasons why they stay at FSU, by the way, is I seem to recall when they first located to FSU that there's actually a partnership where part of the point is for FSU students to get experience working on a show.
You know, I heard that, and that it ticked me off at first because, having been a student there however many years ago, I was like, man, I paid the same tuition. Well, the tuition's gone up, but I paid the tuition, and, the same school, the same degree has this cool opportunity that I didn't get to do. Are you kidding me? I tried to go audit courses, and they wouldn't let me through some technicality, and I just shouldn't get into that right now. I'm very bitter about it, but I still go to the tapings. I don't know where those opportunities are. Maybe I should try to mine into that a little bit more and just make myself more bitter in the process. But I see the same people all the time working these events, and they appear to be WWE staff. But then just at this last taping, there was a very eager Full Sail student sitting next to me talking about how he couldn't wait to get on the staff and start shooting and start touring with the live events. And I'm thinking, so he must have heard something. Maybe he heard the same thing that we did however many years ago, and maybe that's not still a thing. But anyway, I did hear the same thing you heard. I haven't seen the evidence of it, but maybe I'm just not looking in the right places.
Maybe we could get Breezango on this case.
Well, anyway, I'm not I wasn't advocating for a longer NXT show. I agree with Justin. 2 hours would probably kill it for me. SmackDown feels like a slog a lot of times. But I also think that, you know, if they wanted to, they could get creative. You could probably do an hour and a half show per week without changing the taping schedules at all. Just work in an extra half hour of, you know, a one or two matches from live events instead. Maybe some more promo, some more video packages and long form documentary stuff, because that stuff always seems to go over really strong and helps to build the characters in a way that we're not getting. The reason I brought it up, I think, was just because we're talking about Mustache Mountain, and the UK title is, again, one of those weird things where Pete shows up every couple of weeks, every month or two, defends the title, but doesn't get stories, doesn't get feuds. We don't know what's happening there. I don't know. I have no intel that like tells me there's plans to expand NXT, or just a thought. But, I mean, hey, if there's another way to ensure that everybody on the roster gets adequate TV time and storylines is to trim the roster a bit. On that note, there were a couple of releases this week. I think Tom has the names for us.
Yeah, I'll start from the ones that we know the least about and move up. It was Demetrius Bronson was released, presumably due to some sort of serious injury that he suffered. I believe we saw him on TV once or twice. You may have it in your stats, Harley. I want to say he jobbed to Lars Sullivan.
Everybody did it.
Remember any? Yeah. So nothing super specific there. All I really know about him is that he's a former Seahawk. Then we have Ming, one of the Chinese recruits who I have been very curious about, not him specifically, just there are certain ones in particular that I'm very curious about. I've actually been super eager, and I think about it on almost a daily basis. Whenever the next time is that we get an opportunity to talk about Zeta, I'm really excited about her. Ming, it was the really, really big Chinese dude that came in with a bunch of these other Chinese recruits. And he was working with, and here I am embarrassing myself. I can think of this guy's name any other time of the week, but when we start recording, it escapes my mind. But he was sort of the bodyguard for this cocky heel character who I believe has only worked live events so far. And I'm not sure.
The Andre the Giant Battle Royal?
That was Chan Bing.
Okay.
And Chan Bing's claim to fame is that he was the very first Chinese signee. Before this crop came in after him. Ming, big dude, and I'm not sure if there are any details on exactly, actually, I don't think there are any details on exactly why for any of these people other than Demetrius, just due to the serious injury.
Yeah.
Then on the female side of things, we also had Sage Beckett was released, and she was rumored late last year to maybe be coming up to the main roster as Sister Abigail for Bray Wyatt. I am not sure if that was just a rumor or if maybe it was planned. She clearly heard about it and was sort of playing into it, but that's probably the most notoriety that she got in the company. She did lose in the first round of the Mae Young Classic to Bianca Belair. Big imposing woman. And she had a good story because she overcame illnesses and other health issues. I feel like it was a back issue, but then researching it, I didn't see anything about that. So maybe I'm crossing my wires here. But she definitely had some serious health issues that she overcame to get back in the ring. And she sent out a tweet saying that, you know, she's given her body for this long and now she's going to start using her brain. So it seems to imply that she is now retiring from in-ring action, if I were to read into that. And if I were to try to read into why they may have let her go, the only thing I can think of, and this is pure speculation, is that she has a very similar body type to Nia Jax, and they're already doing a lot with Nia on the main roster. So maybe they didn't see her going up all that soon. And this, I mean, I've only seen Sage work two matches in WWE, and I've only seen Reyna Gonzalez work one match in WWE. But they strike me as very, very similar, both in appearance and how they came across to me when I saw them. So I wonder if, and they have been doing more with Reyna at the live events lately. So I wonder if maybe they just didn't see Sage slotting in anywhere. Maybe some health issues are cropping up again. Again, this is just pure speculation, so I do not know. And finally, and this one hurts. Abby Laith was released. This all broke about 6 days ago. I think it actually happened the day of the taping. So last time we recorded, while you guys recorded and I was at the tapings, I think that's when it happened. And the news broke the next day, I believe. Abby Laith, one of the most important things for me, I think if I in this fantasy world where if I get to run my own promotion and pick my own roster, one of the things that I'm going to look for is people who stand out, people who I'm going to recognize if I just see them on the street. There are a lot of people that I see in the company and I think, like, I don't know if I would, if they walked by me in the grocery store, I don't think I would realize it was them. And Abby Laith doesn't have the roster. Almost, you know what? It's kind of funny because almost contradictory to what I'm saying, she does have sort of like an every woman kind of look. I feel like she's very unique and I would recognize her in public, but she also looks like somebody you would see in public, but it just so happens that, you know, as is one of her catchphrases, she's a wrestler. Hashtag she's a wrestler, and she can get in that ring and she can kick your ass. And she was given a lot in the Mae Young Classic. She went over two of my favorites in the tournament, Jazzy Gabbert and Rachel Ellering, using Mae Young's alligator clutch. So they seemed to see something in her. And then when she did lose in, it wasn't the semifinals, but whatever, however many, you know, when she went up against, when she went up against Mercedes Martinez, just, you know, just, this is just subjective, my own experience, but I became a huge fan of Mercedes Martinez right then and there, because I kind of didn't like Abby for having beat two of my favorites. And then all of that energy and all of that effort went into me going absolutely nuts for Mercedes. So they gave Abby a lot and they put her in a very important role in the tournament. And I know she's got a pretty strong following, and it's just, I don't know why you cut someone like her. And it's just unfortunate to have had that news break. As a detail on top of it, I've noticed that she has a booked slate of indie appearances now. And I guess I didn't really think of it before. It seems obvious, especially for somebody who wasn't appearing on TV. I think the only time she was on NXT TV was for that Women's Battle Royal last year. I guess they don't have a non-compete clause, because she's going right back to indies right away, back as under her old name, Kimber Lee. So, yeah, that's my spiel on all of that. I'm sad to see Abby go, and confused about Ming, I guess.
There you go. But, you know, it's a business. These things happen. We've been talking all episode about all these people who might possibly end up on Raw or SmackDown after WrestleMania. But then whenever that happens, you think in the back of your head, ooh, what does that mean for the people who are there right now? You know, if you bring up Sanity, you bring up Authors of Pain, you bring up all these others, what does that mean for Breezango? What does that mean for Slater and Rhino, people like that, people like Alicia Fox? I don't know. But we got TakeOver New Orleans, 24 days away. We're looking at Almas and Black for the NXT title. We got Moon and Baszler for the women's title. We know Fish and O'Reilly will be facing the winners of the Dusty Classic. And in TakeOver tradition, we got to assume there'll probably be two more matches on that card. with still a lot of names left over. Your Velveteen
Dream. Ray and Vega.
The Ray and Vega, Dream. Velveteen Dream, Adam Cole, Lars Sullivan, EC3, Ricochet, War Machine.
I think
Cassius Ohno.
I think we'd get something involving Dunn, Cole,
Dunn,
and
Roddy.
Strong.
There's a lot, No Way Jose. There's a lot of people. So
No Way Jose doesn't make it to a takeover. Come on.
Oh, come on. I think there's a good chance we might get No Way Jose versus Tino Sabatelli in number one contenders match.
What?
I'm going to go ahead and make the decision. It's not going to be a spoiler to say what the dark match was at the taping. It was No Way Jose versus Marcel Bartel. And I also saw that match at a live event, and they worked basically the same match. It's a comedy match. They do comedy spots. No Way Jose, like, makes Marcel, who takes himself so seriously, inadvertently dance, and he gets all upset and starts shouting in German. Marcel's entertaining. I'm over No Way Jose at this point. And, so dark match for Jose.
There you go. Well, next week is the first episode of the Full Sail tapings that Tom
Thank
attended
goodness.
In person. That's the last set of tapings before New Orleans, so we're hopefully next week and the week after start to figure out the rest of the card, where everything's going from here. In the meantime, I mean, if you haven't read spoilers, send us your predictions on what do you think the card will be, or your thoughts on next week's show, everything on this week's show, any questions you have, you can reach us at pwtorchnxt@gmail.com. Your regularly scheduled host, Kelly Wells, will be back next week. I will be sitting out next week, barring any more unplanned developments. But in the meantime, you can find me on Twitter at Talking Honor. You can also catch my other podcast, Talking Honor, if you're an ROH or Ring of Honor fan, that launches Mondays over on PW Torch. Justin, we can reach you at...
Justin_M_James on Twitter.
There you go. And Tom.
And at Tom Staup, TomStoup.
All right. So that is our full show for this week. Thanks for tuning in, as always, folks. And these two and Mr. Wells will be back to talk your ear off about Adam Cole some more next week. See ya.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, this show can be ad-free and commercial-free with a VIP membership. VIP members not only enjoy all 7 episodes of the PW Torch Livecast with no commercials and the ads and plugs edited out, but they also get ad-free additions to the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling post shows and the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling podcast. Also, part of a VIP membership and exclusive shows such as the Every Single Day Wade Keller Hotline, the 3 times a week Bruce Mitchell Audio Show, including a new weekly mailbag edition with Bruce, The Fix with Todd Martin that I also host, post-pay-per-view roundtables that I host, and other shows on specific topics, including the new Talking Honor podcast with Lola and Harley discussing the latest in ROH, including a review of the latest TV show. And now we are proud to announce that Alan Cunahan, known as Alan4L, has brought his talents to PW Torch after many years at The Observer, and there's a lot of excitement about his new weekly show called Alan4L's Pro Wrest Paradise, with the best coverage of New Japan, all of Japan, the UK indie scene, including the US indie scene. So be sure to become a PW Torch VIP member for as little as $8.25 a month on average, and have multiple new VIP exclusive and ad-free podcasts every day on customizable feeds on your iPhone and Android device. For more information and our sign-up form, go to pwtorch.com/govip, and you'll find out what else comes with VIP membership, including a weekly newsletter, over 1,500 back issues of the Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter that started it all, ad-free access to our mobile and desktop sites, and more. Full lineup, full details, and the sign-up form at pwtorch.com/govip.